ship's outlines. Fires dotted the cliffside, the flames exposed where no Fremen would have dared betray his presence. The fires winked at Leto as people passed in front of them, museum Fremen exercising their right to occupy the sacred precincts. Museum Fremen, Leto thought. They were such narrow thinkers, with near horizons. But why should I object? They are what I made them. Leto heard the Bene Gesserit delegation then. They chanted as they approached, a heavy sound all a jostle with vowels. Moneo preceded them with a guard detail which took up position on Leto's ledge. Moneo stood on the chamber floor just below Leto's face, glanced at Leto, turned to the open hall. The women entered in a double file, 10 of them led by 2 reverend mothers in traditional black robes.
That is Antiac on the left, Lucéal on the right, Moneo said.
The names recalled for Leto the earlier words about the reverend mothers brought in by Moneo, agitated and distrustful. Moneo did not like the witches.
They're both truth-sayers, Moneo had said. Antiac is much older than Lucéal, but the latter is reputed to be the best truth-sayer the Bene Gesserit have. You may note that Antiac has a scar on her forehead, whose origin we have been unable to discover. Lucéal has red hair and appears remarkably young for one of her reputation.
As he watched the Reverend Mother's approach with their entourage, Leto felt the quick surge of his memories. The women wore their hoods forward, shrouding their faces. The attendants and acolytes walked at a respectful distance behind. It was all of a piece. Some patterns did not change. These women might have been entering a real siege with real Fremen here to honour them. Their heads know what their bodies deny, he thought. Leto's penetrating vision saw the subservient caution in their eyes, but they strode up the long chamber like people confident of their religious power. It pleased Leto to think that the Bene Gesserit possessed only such powers as he permitted. The reasons for this indulgence were clear to him. Of all the people in his empire, reverend mothers were most like him, limited to the memories of only their female ancestors and the collateral female identities of their inheritance ritual, still each of them did exist as somewhat of an integrated mob. The reverend mothers came to a stop at the required 10 paces from Leto's ledge. The entourage spread out on each side. It amused Leto to greet such delegations in the voice and persona of his grandmother Jessica. The Bene Gesserit had come to expect this, and he did not disappoint them.
Welcome, sisters, he said.
The voice was a smooth contralto, definitely Jessica's controlled feminine tones with just a hint of mockery, a voice recorded and often studied in the sisterhood's chapter house. As he spoke, Leto sensed menace. Reverend mothers were never pleased when he greeted them this way, but the reaction here carried different undertones. Moneo, too, sensed it. He raised a finger and the guards moved closer to Leto. Antiac spoke first.
Lord, we watched that display in the plaza this morning. What do you gain by such antics?
So that's the tone we wish to set, he thought.
Speaking in his own voice, he said,
You are temporarily in my good graces. Would you change that?
Lord, Antiac said, we are shocked that you could thus punish an ambassador. We do not understand what you gain by this.
I gain nothing. I am diminished.
Lucéal spoke up.
This can only reinforce thoughts of oppression.
I wonder why so few ever thought of the Bene Gesserit as oppressors, Leto asked.
Antiac spoke to her companion.
If it pleases the God Emperor to inform us, he will do so. Let us get to the purposes of our embassy.
Leto smiled.
The two of you can come closer. Leave your attendants and approach.
Moneo stepped 2 paces to his right as the Reverend Mother moved in characteristic silent gliding to within 3 paces of the ledge.
It's almost as though they had no feet,
Moneo had once complained. Recalling this, Leto observed how carefully Moneo watched the 2 women. They were menacing, but Moneo dared not object to their nearness. The God Emperor had ordered it, thus it would be. Leto lifted his attention to the attendants waiting where the Bene Gesserit entourage had first stopped. The acolytes wore hoodless black gowns. He saw tiny clues to forbidden rituals about them, an amulet, a small trinket, a colourful corner of a kerchief so arranged that more colour might be flashed carefully. Leto knew that the Reverend Mothers allowed this because they no longer could share the spice as once they had.
Ritual substitutes.
There were significant changes across the past 10 years. A new parsimony had entered the sisterhood's thinking.
They are coming out, Leto told himself. The old, old mysteries are still here.
The ancient patterns had lain dormant in the Bene Gesserit memories for all of those millennia.
Now they emerge. I must warn my fish speakers.
He returned his attention to the Reverend Mothers.
You have requests?
What is it like to be you?
Lucéal asked. Leto blinked. That was an interesting attack. They had not tried it in more than a generation. Well, why not?
Sometimes my dreams are blocked off and redirected into strange places, he said. If my cosmic memories are a web, as you two certainly know, then think about the dimensions of my web, and where such memories and dreams might lead.
You speak of our certain knowledge, Antiak said. Why can't we join forces at last? We are more alike than we are different.
I would sooner link myself to those degenerate great houses bewailing their lost spice riches.
Antiak held herself still, but Lucéal pointed a finger at Leto.
We offer community.
And I insist on conflict?
Antiak stirred. Then, it is said that there is a principle of conflict which originated with a single cell and has never deteriorated.
Some things remain incompatible, Leto agreed.
Then how does our sisterhood maintain its community? Lucéal demanded.
Leto hardened his voice.
As you well know, the secret of community lies in suppression of the incompatible.
There can be enormous value in cooperation, Antiak said.
To you, not to me.
Antiak contrived a sigh.
Then, Lord, will you tell us about the physical changes in your person?
Someone besides yourself should know about and record such things, Lucéal said. In case something dreadful should happen to me?
Leto asked.
Lord, Antiak protested. We do not—
You dissect me with words when you would prefer sharper instruments, Leto said. Hypocrisy offends me.
We protest, Lord, Antiak said.
Indeed you do. I hear you.
Lucéal crept a few millimeters closer to the ledge, bringing a sharp stare from Moneo, who glanced up at Leto then. Moneo's expression demanded action, but Leto ignored him, curious now about Lucéal's intentions. The sense of menace was centered in the red-haired one.
What is she? Leto wondered. Could she be a face dancer after all?
No, none of the telltale signs were there. No, Lucéal presented an elaborately relaxed appearance, not even a little twist of her features to test the God Emperor's powers of observation.
Will you not tell us about your physical changes, Lord?
Antiak asked.
Diversion, Leto thought. My brain grows enormous, he said. Most of the human skull has dissolved away. There are no severe limits to the growth of my cortex and its attendant nervous system.
Moneo darted a startled glance at Leto. Why was the God Emperor giving away such vital information? These two would trade it. But both women were obviously fascinated by this revelation, hesitating in whatever plan they had evolved.
Does your brain have a center? Lucéal asked.
I am the center, Leto said.
A location? Antiak asked.
She gestured vaguely at him. Lucéal glided a few millimeters closer to the ledge.
What value do you place on the things I reveal to you? Leto asked.
The two women betrayed no change of expression, which was betrayal enough by itself. A smile flitted across Leto's lips.
The marketplace has captured you, he said. Even the Bene Gesserit has been infected by the Souk mentality.
We do not deserve that accusation, Antioch said.
But you do. The souk mentality dominates my empire. The uses of the market have only been sharpened and amplified by the demands of our times. We have all become traders.
Even you, Lord? Lusail asked.
You tempt my wrath, he said. You're a specialist in that, aren't you?
Lord?
Lusail's voice was calm, but overly controlled.
Specialists are not to be trusted, Leto said. Specialists are masters of exclusion, experts in the narrow.
We hope to be architects of a better future, Antioch said.
Better than what? Leto asked.
Lusail eased herself a fractional pace closer to Leto.
We hope to set our standards by your judgment, Lord, Antioch said.
But you would be architects. Would you build higher walls? Never forget, sisters, that I know you. You are efficient purveyors of blinders.
Life continues, Lord, Antioch said.
Indeed, and so does the universe.
Lusail eased herself a bit closer, ignoring the fixity of Moneo's attention. Leto smelled it then, and almost laughed aloud.
Spice essence.
They had brought some spice essence. They knew the old stories about sandworms and spice essence, of course. Lusail carried it. She thought of it as a specific poison for sandworms. That was obvious. Bene Gesserit records and the oral history agreed on this. The essence shattered the worm, precipitating its dissolution and resulting eventually in sand trout, which would produce more sandworms, etc., etc., etc.
There is another change in me that you should know about, Leto said. I am not yet sandworm, not fully. Think of me as something closer to a colony creature with sensory alterations.
Lucelle's left hand moved almost imperceptibly toward a fold in her gown. Moneo saw it and looked to Leto for instructions, but Leto only returned the hooded glare of Lucelle's eyes.
There have been fads in smells, Leto said.
Lucelle's hand hesitated.
Perfumes and essences, he said. I remember them all. Even the cults of the non-smells are mine. People have used underarm sprays and crotch sprays to mask their natural odors. Did you know that? Of course you knew it.
Antioch's gaze moved toward Lucial. Neither woman dared speak.
People knew instinctively that their pheromones betrayed them, Leto said.
The women stood immobile. They heard him. Of all his people, Reverend Mothers were best equipped to understand his hidden message.
You'd like to mine me for my riches of memory, Leto said, his voice accusing.
We are jealous, Lord, Lusail confessed.
You have misread the history of spice essence, Leto said. Sand trout sense it only as water.
It was a test, Lord, Antioch said. That is all.
You would test me?
Blame our curiosity, Lord, Antioch said.
I too am curious. Put your spice essence on the ledge beside Moneo. I will keep it.
Slowly, demonstrating by the steadiness of her movements that she intended no attack, Lusail reached beneath her gown and removed a small vial which glistened with an inner blue radiance. She placed the vial gently on the ledge. Not by any sign did she indicate that she might try something desperate.
Truthsayer indeed, Leto said.
She favored him with a faint grimace which might have been a smile, then withdrew to Antioch's side.
Where did you get the spice essence? Leto asked.
We bought it from smugglers, Antioch said.
There have been no smugglers for almost 2,500 years.
Waste not, want not, Antioch said.
I see. And now you must reevaluate what you think of as your own patients. Is that not so?
We have been watching the evolution of your body, Lord, Antioch said. We thought...
She permitted herself a small shrug, the level of gesture warranted for use with a sister and not given lightly. Leto pursued his lips in response.
I cannot shrug, he said.
Will you punish us?
Lusail asked.
For amusing me?
Lucille glanced at the vial on the ledge.
I swore to reward you, Leto said. I shall.
We would prefer to protect you in our community, Lord, Antiak said.
Do not seek too great a reward, he said.
Antiak nodded.
You deal with the Ixians, Lord. We have reason to believe they may venture against you.
I fear them no more than I fear you.
Surely you've heard what the Ixians are doing, Lucille said.
Moneo brings me an occasional copy of a message between persons or groups in my empire. I hear many stories.
We speak of a new abomination, Lord, Antiak said.
You think the Ixians can produce an artificial intelligence? He asked. Conscious the way you are conscious?
We fear it, Lord, Antiak said.
You would have me believe that the Butlerian Jihad survives among the Sisterhood?
We do not trust the unknown which can arise from imaginative technology, Antiak said.
Lucille leaned toward him.
The Ixians boast that their machine will transcend time in the way that you do it, Lord.
And the Guild says there's time chaos around the Ixians, Leto mocked. Are we to fear all creation, then?
Antiak drew herself up stiffly.
I speak truth with you two, Leto said. I recognize your abilities. Will you not recognize mine?
Lucille gave him a curt nod.
Playlax and Ix make alliance with the Guild and seek our full cooperation.
And you fear Ix the most?
We fear anything we do not control, Antiak said.
And you do not control me?
Without you, people would need us, Antiak said.
Truth at last, Leto said. You come to me as your oracle, and you ask me to put your fears to rest.
Antiak's voice was frigidly controlled.
Will Ix make a mechanical brain?
A brain? Of course not.
Lucille appeared to relax, but Antiak remained unmoving. She was not satisfied with the oracle.
Why is it that foolishness repeats itself with such monotonous precision? Leto wondered.
His memories offered up countless scenes to match this one. Caverns, priests and priestesses caught up in holy ecstasy, portentous voices delivering dangerous prophecies through the smoke of holy narcotics. He glanced down at the iridescent vial on the ledge beside Moneo. What was the current value of that thing? Enormous. It was the essence. Concentrated wealth, concentrated.
You have already paid the oracle, he said. It amuses me to give you full value.
How alert the women became.
Hear me, he said. What you fear is not what you fear.
Leto liked the sound of that, sufficiently portentous for any oracle. Antiak and Lucille stared up at him, dutiful supplicants. Behind them, an acolyte cleared her throat.
That one will be identified and reprimanded later, Leto thought.
Antiak had now had sufficient time to ruminate on Leto's words. She said,
An obscure truth is not the truth.
But I have directed your attention correctly, Leto said.
Are you telling us not to fear the machine?
Lucille asked.
You have the power of reason, he said. Why come begging to me?
But we do not have your powers, Antiak said.
You complain then that you do not sense the gossamer waves of time. You do not sense my continuum. And you fear a mere machine.
Then you will not answer us, Antiak said.
Do not make the mistake of thinking me ignorant about your sisterhood's ways, he said. You are alive. Your senses are exquisitely tuned. I do not stop this, nor should you.
But the Ixians play with automation, Antiak protested.
Discrete pieces, finite bits linked one to another, he agreed. Once set in motion, what is to stop it?
Lucille discarded all pretense of Bene Gesserit's self-control, a fine comment on her recognition of Leto's powers. Her voice almost screeched.
Do you know what the Ixians boast? That their machine will predict your actions.
Why should I fear that? The closer they come to me, the more they must be my allies. They cannot conquer me, but I can conquer them.
Antiak made to speak, but stopped when Lucille touched her arm.
Are you already allied with Ix? Lucille asked.
We hear that you conferred over long with their new ambassador, this Hui Nori. I have no allies, he said, only servants, students, and enemies.
And you do not fear the Ixion's machine? Antiak insisted.
Is automation synonymous with conscious intelligence? He asked.
Antiak's eyes went wide and filmy as she withdrew into her memories. Leto found himself caught by fascination with what she must be encountering there within her own internal mob.
We share some of those memories, he thought.
Leto felt then the seductive attraction of community with reverend mothers. It would be so familiar, so supportive, and so deadly. Antiak was trying to lure him once more. She spoke.
The machine cannot anticipate every problem of importance to humans. It is the difference between serial bits and an unbroken continuum. We have the one. Machines are confined to the other.
You still have the power of reason, he said.
Share,
Lucéal said. It was a command to Antiak, and it revealed with sharp abruptness who really dominated this pair, the younger over the older.
Exquisite, Leto thought.
Intelligence adapts, Antiak said.
Parsimonious with her words, too, Leto thought, hiding his amusement. Intelligence creates, Leto said. That means you must deal with responses never before imagined. You must confront the new.
Such as the possibility of the Ixion machine, Antiak said.
It was not a question.
Isn't it interesting, Leto asked, that being a superb reverend mother is not enough?
His acute senses detected the sudden fearful tightening in both of the women. Truth-sayers indeed.
You are right to fear me, he said.
Raising his voice, he demanded, How do you know you're even alive? As Moneo had done so many times, they heard in his voice the deadly consequences of failure to answer him correctly. It fascinated Leto that both women glanced at Moneo before either responded.
I am the mirror of myself, Lucéal said,
a pat Bene Gesserit answer which Leto found offensive.
I don't need preset tools to deal with my human problems, Antiak said. Your question is sophomoric.
Ha ha! Leto laughed. How would you like to quit the Bene Gesserit and join me?
He could see her consider and then reject the invitation, but she did not hide her amusement. Leto looked at the puzzled Lucéal.
If it falls outside your yardsticks, then you are engaged with intelligence, not with automation, he said. And he thought, that Lucéal will never again dominate old Antiak.
Lucéal was angry now and not bothering to conceal it. She said,
The Ixions are rumored to have provided you with machines that simulate human thinking. If you have such a low opinion of them, why?
She should not be let out of the chapter house without a guardian,
Leto said, addressing Antiak.
Is she afraid to address her own memories?
Lucéal paled, but remained silent. Leto studied her coldly.
Our ancestors' long unconscious relationship with machines has taught us something, don't you think?
Lucéal merely glared at him, not ready yet to risk death through open defiance of the God Emperor.
Would you say we at least know the attraction of machines? Leto asked.
Lucéal nodded.
A well-maintained machine can be more reliable than a human servant, Leto said. We can trust machines not to indulge in emotional distractions.
Lucéal found her voice.
Does this mean you intend to remove the Butlerian prohibition against abominable machines?
I swear to you,
Leto said, speaking in his icy voice of disdain,
that if you display further such stupidity, I will have you publicly executed. I am not your oracle.
Lucéal opened her mouth and closed it without speaking. Antiak touched her companion's arm, sending a quick tremor through Lucéal's body. Antiak spoke softly in an exquisite demonstration of voice.
Our God Emperor will never openly defy the proscriptions of the Butlerian Jihad.
Leto smiled at her. A gentle commendation. It was such a pleasure to see a professional performing at her best.
That should be obvious to any conscious intelligence, he said. There are limits of my own choosing, places where I will not interfere.
He could see both women absorbing the multi-pronged thrust of his words, weighing the possible meanings and intents. Was the God Emperor distracting them, focusing their attention on the Ixians while he maneuvered elsewhere? Was he telling the Bene Gesserit that the time had come to choose sides against the Ixians? Was it possible his words had no more than their surface motivations? Whatever his reasons, they could not be ignored. It was undoubtedly the most devious creature the universe had ever spawned. Leto scowled at Lucéal, knowing he could only add to their confusion.
I pointed out to you, Marcus, Claire, Lucéal, a lesson from past over-machined societies which you appear not to have learned. The devices themselves condition the users to employ each other the way they employ machines.
He turned his attention to Moneo.
Moneo?
I see him, Lord.
Moneo craned his neck to peer over the Bene Gesserit entourage. Duncan Idaho had entered the far portal and strode across the open floor of the chamber toward Leto. Moneo did not relax his wariness, his distrust of the Bene Gesserit, but he recognized the nature of Leto's lecture.
He is testing, always testing.
Antioch cleared her throat.
Lord, what of our reward?
You are brave, Leto said. No doubt that's why you were chosen for this embassy. Very well. For the next decade, I will continue your spice allotment at its present level. As for the rest, I will ignore what you really intended with the spice essence. Am I not generous?
Most generous, Lord,
Antioch said, and there was not the slightest hint of bitterness in her voice. Duncan Idaho brushed past the women then and stopped beside Moneo to peer up at Leto.
My lord, there's...
He broke off and glanced at the two reverend mothers.
Speak openly, Leto commanded.
Yes, my lord.
There was reluctance in him,
but he obeyed.
We were attacked at the southeast edge of the city. A distraction, I believe, because there now are reports of more violence in the city and in the Forbidden Forest. Many scattered raiding parties.
They are hunting my wolves, Leto said, in the forest and in the city. They are hunting my wolves.
Idaho's brows contracted into a puzzled frown.
Wolves in the city, my lord?
Predators, Leto said. Wolves. To me there is no essential difference.
Moneo gasped. Leto smiled at him, thinking how beautiful it was to observe a moment of realization, a veil pulled away from the eyes, the mind opened.
I've brought a large force of guards to protect this place, Idaho said. They are posted through the...
I knew you would, Leto said. Now pay close attention while I tell you where to send the rest of your forces.
As the Reverend Mothers watched in awe, Leto laid out for Idaho the exact points for ambushes, detailing the size of each force and even some of the specific personnel, the timing, the necessary weapons, the precise deployments at each place. Idaho's capacious memory catalogued each instruction. He was too caught up in the recital to question it until Leto fell silent, but a look of puzzled fear came over Idaho then. For Leto, it was as though he peered directly into Idaho's most essential awareness to read the thoughts there.
I was a trusted soldier of the original Lord Leto,
Idaho was thinking.
That Leto, the grandfather of this one, saved me and took me into his household like a son. But even though that Leto still has some kind of existence in this one, this is not him.
My lord, why do you need me?
Idaho asked.
For your strength and loyalty.
Idaho shook his head.
But
you obey,
Leto said. And he noted the way these words were being absorbed by the Reverend Mothers.
Truth, only truth, for they are truth-sayers.
Because I owe a debt to the Atreides,
Idaho said.
That is where we place our trust, Leto said. And Duncan?
My lord?
Idaho's voice said he had found ground where he could stand.
Leave at least one survivor at each place, Leto said. Otherwise our efforts are wasted.
Idaho nodded once, curtly, and left, striding back across the hall the way he had come. And Leto thought it would take an extremely sensitive eye indeed to see that it was a different Idaho leaving, far different from the one who had entered. Antiak said,
"This comes of flogging that ambassador."
"Exactly," Leto agreed. "Recount this carefully to your superior, the admirable Reverend Mother Siaxa. Tell her for me that I prefer the company of predators above that of the prey."
He glanced at Moneo, who drew himself to attention.
"Moneo, the wolves are gone from my forest. They must be replaced by human wolves. See to it."
The trance state of prophecy is like no other visionary experience. It is not a retreat from the raw exposure of the senses, as are many trance states, but an immersion in a multitude of new movements. Things move. It is an ultimate pragmatism in the midst of infinity, a demanding consciousness where you come at last into the unbroken awareness that the universe moves of itself, that it changes, that its rules change, that nothing remains permanent or absolute throughout all such movement, that mechanical explanations for anything can work only within precise confinements, and once the walls are broken down, the old explanations shatter and dissolve, blown away by new movements. The things you see in this trance are sobering, often shattering. They demand your utmost effort to remain whole, and even so, you emerge from that state profoundly changed. The Stolen Journals.
That night of Audience Day, while others slept and fought and dreamed and died, Leto took his repose in the isolation of his audience chamber, only a few trusted fish speaker guards at the portals. He did not sleep. His mind whirled with necessities and disappointments.
Hui. Hui.
He knew why Hui Nori had been sent to him now. How well he knew.
My most secret secret is exposed.
They had discovered his secret. Hui was the evidence of it. He thought desperate thoughts. Could this terrible metamorphosis be reversed? Could he return to a human state?
Not possible.
Even if it were possible, the process would take him just as long as it had taken to reach this point. Where would Hui be in more than 3,000 years? Dry dust and bones in the crypt.
I could breed something like her and prepare that one for me. But that would not be my gentle Hui.
And what of the Golden Path while he indulged in such selfish goals?
To hell with the Golden Path! Have these folly-bound idiots ever thought once of me? Not once!
But that was not true. Hui thought of him. She shared his torture. These were thoughts of madness, and he tried to put them away while his senses reported the soft movement of the guards and the flow of water beneath his chamber.
When I made this choice, what were my expectations?
How the mob within laughed at that question. Did he not have a task to complete? Was that not the very essence of the agreement which kept the mob in check? You have a task to complete, they said. You have but one purpose.
Single purpose is the mark of the fanatic, and I am not a fanatic.
You must be cynical and cruel. You cannot break the trust.
Why not?
Who took the oath? You did. You chose this course.
Expectations.
The expectations which history creates for one generation are often shattered in the next generation. Who knows that better than you?
Yes, and shattered expectations can alienate whole populations. I alone am a whole population.
Remember your oath.
Indeed. I am the disruptive force unleashed across the centuries. I limit expectations, including my own. I dampen the pendulum.
And then release it. Never forget that.
I am tired. Oh, how tired I am. If only I could sleep. Really sleep.
You're full of self-pity, too.
Why not? What am I? The ultimate loner forced to look at what might have been. Every day I look at it. And now,
Hui.
Your original unselfish choice fills you now with selfishness.
There is danger all around. I must wear my selfishness like a suit of armor.
There's danger for everyone who touches you. Isn't that your very nature?
Danger even for Hui.
Dear, delectable,
dear Hui.
Did you build high walls around you only to sit within them and indulge in self-pity?
The walls were built because great forces have been unleashed in my empire.
You unleashed them. Will you now compromise with them?
It's Hui's doing. These feelings have never before been this powerful in me. It's the damnable Ixions.
How interesting that they should assault you with flesh rather than with a machine.
Because they have discovered my secret.
You know the antidote.
Leto's great body trembled through its entire length at this thought. He well knew the antidote, which had always worked before. Lose himself for a time in his own past. Not even the Bene Gesserit sisters could take such safaris, striking inward along the axis of memories, back to the very limits of cellular awareness, or stopping by a wayside to revel in a sophisticated sensory delight. Once, after the death of a particularly superb Duncan, he had toured great musical performances preserved in his memories. Mozart had tired him quickly.
Pretentious. But Bach? Ah, Bach.
Leto remembered the joy of it.
I sat at the organ and let the music drench me.
Only three times in all memory had there been an equal to Bach. But even Le Carlo was not better. As good, but not better. Would female intellectuals be the proper choice for this night? Grandmother Jessica had been one of the best. Experience told him that someone as close to him as Jessica would not be the proper antidote for his present tensions. The search would have to venture much farther. He imagined, then, describing such a safari to some awe-struck visitor, a totally imaginary visitor because none would dare question him about such a holy matter.
I course backward down the flight of ancestors, hunting along the tributaries, darting into nooks and crannies. You would not recognize many of their names. Who has ever heard of Norma Senva? I have lived her.
Lived her? His imaginary visitor asked.
Of course. Why else would one keep one's ancestors around? You think a man designed the first guild ship? Your history books told you it was Aurelius Venport? They lied. It was his mistress, Norma. She gave him the design, along with five children. He thought his ego would take no less. In the end, the knowledge that he had not really fulfilled his own image, that was what destroyed him.
You have lived him, too?
Naturally. And I have traversed the far wanderings of the Fremen. Through my father's line and the others, I have gone right back to the house of Atreus.
Such an illustrious line.
With its fair share of fools. Distraction is what I need, he thought.
Would it be a tour through sexual dalliances and exploits, then?
You have no idea what internal orgies are available to me. I am the ultimate voyeur, participant or participants, and observer or observers. Ignorance and misunderstandings about sexuality have caused so much distress. How abysmally narrow we have been, how miserly.
Leto knew he could not make that choice, not this night, not with Hui out there in his city. Would he choose a review of warfare, then?
Which Napoleon was the greater coward? He asked his imaginary visitor. I will not reveal it, but I know. Oh, yes, I know. Where can I go? With all of the past open to me, where can I go?
The brothels, the atrocities, the tyrants, the acrobats, nudists, surgeons, male whores, musicians, magicians, angenciers, priests, artisans, priestesses.
Are you aware, he asked his imaginary visitor, that the hula preserves an ancient sign language which once belonged only to males? You've never heard of the hula? Of course. Who dances it anymore?
Dancers have preserved many things, though. The translations have been lost, but I know them. One whole night I was a series of caliphs, moving eastward and westward with Islam, a traverse of centuries. I will not bore you with the details. Be gone now, visitor.
How seductive it is, he thought, this call of the siren which would have me live only in the past. And how useless that past now, thanks to the damnable Ixions. How boring the past when Hui is here. She would come to me right now if I summoned her, but I cannot call for her. Not now. Not tonight.
The past continued to beckon. I could make a pilgrimage into my past. It does not have to be a safari. I could go alone. Pilgrimage purifies. Safaris make me into a tourist. That's the difference. I could go alone into my inner world and never return.
Leto felt the inevitability of it, that the dream state would eventually trap him.
I create a special dream state throughout my empire. Within this dream, new myths form, new directions appear, and new movements. New, new, new. The things emerge from my own dreams, out of my myths. Who more susceptible to them than I? The hunter is caught in his own net.
Leto knew then that he had encountered a condition for which no antidote existed, past, present, or future. His great body trembled and shivered in the gloom of his audience chamber. At the portal, one fish speaker guard whispered to another,
"Is God troubled?"
And her companion replied,
"The sins of this universe would trouble anyone."
Leto heard them and wept. Silently.
When I set out to lead humankind along my golden path, I promised them a lesson their bones would remember. I know a profound pattern which humans deny with their words, even while their actions affirm it. They say they seek security and quiet, the condition they call peace. Even as they speak, they create the seeds of turmoil and violence. If they find their quiet security, they squirm in it. How boring they find it. Look at them now. Look at what they do while I record these words. Ha! I give them enduring eons of enforced tranquility which plods on and on, despite their every effort to escape into chaos. Believe me, the memory of Leto's peace shall abide with them forever. They will seek their quiet security thereafter only with extreme caution and steadfast preparation. The Stolen Journals.
Much against his will, Idaho found himself at dawn with Siona beside him being taken to a safe place in an Imperial ornithopter. It raced eastward toward the golden arc of sunlight which lifted over a landscape carved into rectangular green plantations. The thopter was a big one, large enough to carry a small squad of fish speakers with their two guests. The pilot captain of the squad, a brawny woman with a face Idaho could believe had never smiled, had given her name as Inmir. She sat in the pilot's seat directly ahead of Idaho. Two muscular fish speaker guards on either side of her, five more guards sat behind Idaho and Siona.
"God has ordered me to take you away from the city," Inmir had said, coming up to him in the command post beneath the central plaza. "It is for your own safety. We will return by tomorrow morning for Sihanouk."
Idaho, fatigued by a night of alarms, had sensed the futility of arguing against the orders of God himself. Inmir appeared quite capable of trundling him off under one of her thick arms. She had led him from the command post into a chilly night canopied with stars like stone-edged facets of shattered brilliance. It was only when they reached the thopter and Idaho recognized Siona waiting there that he had begun to question the purpose of this outing. During the night, Idaho had come to realize that not all of the violence in On had originated with the organized rebels. When he had inquired after Siona, Moneo had sent word that,
"My daughter is safely out of the way.
adding at the end of the message,
I commend her to your care.
In the Thopter, Siona had not responded to Idaho's questions. Even now she sat in sullen silence beside him. She reminded him of himself in those first bitter days when he had vowed vengeance against the Harkonnens. He wondered at her bitterness. What drove her? Without knowing why, Idaho found himself comparing Siona with Hui Nori. It had not been easy to encounter Hui, but he had managed it in spite of the importunate demands of fish speakers that he attend to duties elsewhere. Gentle. That was the word for Hui. She acted from a core of unchanging gentleness which was, in its own way, a thing of enormous power. He found this intensely attractive.
I must see more of her.
For now, though, he had to contend with the sullen silence of Siona seated beside him. Well, silence could be met with silence. Idaho peered down at the passing landscape. Here and there he could see the clustered lights of villages winking out as the sunlight approached. The desert of the Sarir lay far behind, and this was land that, by its appearance, might never have been parched.
Some things do not change very much, he thought. They are merely taken from one place and reformed in another place.
This landscape reminded him of Caladan's lush gardens and made him wonder what had become of the verdant planet where the Atreides had lived for so many generations before coming to Dune. He could identify narrow roads, market roads with a scattered traffic of vehicles drawn by six-legged animals which he guessed were thorses. Moneo had said that thorses tailored to the needs of such a landscape were the main work beasts not only here, but throughout the Empire.
A population which walks is easier to control.
Moneo's words rang in Idaho's memory as he peered downward. Pastureland appeared ahead of the Thopter, softly rolling green hills cut into irregular patterns by black stone walls. Idaho recognized sheep and several kinds of large cattle. The Thopter passed over a narrow valley still in gloom and with only a hint of the water coursing down its depths. A single light and a blue plume of smoke lifting out of the valley's shadows spoke of human occupation. Siona suddenly stirred and tapped their pilot on the shoulder, pointing off to the right ahead of them.
Isn't that Goigoa over there?
Siona asked. Yes. Ymir spoke without turning, her voice clipped and touched by some emotion which Idaho could not identify.
Is that not a safe place?
Siona asked.
It is safe.
Siona looked at Idaho.
Order her to take us to Goigoa.
Without knowing why he complied, Idaho said,
Take us to that place.
Ymir turned then, and her features, which Idaho had thought a square block of non-emotion during the night, revealed the clear evidence of some deep feeling. Her mouth was drawn down into a scowl. A nerve twitched at the corner of her right eye.
Not Goigoa, Commander,
Ymir said.
There are better. Did the God Emperor tell you to take us to a specific place?
Siona demanded. Ymir glared her anger at this interruption, but did not look directly at Siona.
No, but he...
Then take us to this Goigoa, Idaho said.
Ymir jerked her attention back to the Thopter's controls, and Idaho was thrown against Siona as the craft banked sharply and flew toward a round pocket nestled in the green hills. Idaho peered over Inmir's shoulder to look at their destination. At the very center of the pocket lay a village built of the same black stones as the surrounding fences. Idaho saw orchards on some of the slopes above the village, terraced gardens rising in steps toward a small saddle where hawks could be seen gliding on the day's first updrafts. Looking at Siona, Idaho asked,
What is this, Goigoa?
You will see.
Ymir set the Thopter into a shallow glide which brought them to a gentle landing on a flat stretch of grass at the edge of the village. One of the fish speakers opened the door on the village side. Idaho's nostrils were immediately assaulted by a heady mixture of aromas, crushed grass, animal droppings, the acridity of cooking fires. He slipped out of the Thopter and looked up a village street where people were emerging from their houses to stare at the visitors. Idaho saw an older woman in a long green dress bend over and whisper something to a child, who immediately turned and went dashing away up the street.
Do you like this place?
Siona asked. She dropped down beside him.
It appears pleasant.
Siona looked at Ynmir as the pilot and the other fish speakers joined them on the grass.
When do we go back to On?
You do not go back, Ynmir said. My orders are to take you to the Citadel. The commander goes back.
I see,
Siona nodded.
When will we leave?
At dawn tomorrow. I will see the village leader about quarters. Ynmir strode off into the village.
Gorgor,
Idaho said. That's a strange name.
I wonder what this place was in the Dune days.
I happen to know, Siona said. It is on the old charts as Shulok, which means haunted place. The oral history says great crimes were committed here before all of the inhabitants were wiped out.
Jakarutu,
Idaho whispered, recalling the old legends of the water stealers. He glanced around, looking for the evidence of dunes and ridges. There was nothing. Only two older men with placid faces returning with Ynmir. The men wore faded blue trousers and ragged shirts. Their feet were bare.
Do you know this place?
Siona asked.
Only as a name and a legend.
Some say there are ghosts, she said, but I do not believe it.
Ynmir stopped in front of Idaho and motioned the two barefooted men to wait behind her.
The quarters are poor but adequate, she said, unless you would care to stay in one of the private residences.
She turned and looked at Siona as she said this.
We will decide later,
Siona said. She took Idaho's arm.
The commander and I wish to stroll through Goigoa and admire the sights.
Ynmir shaped her mouth to speak, but remained silent. Idaho allowed Siona to lead him past the peering faces of the two local men.
I will send two guards with you, Ynmir called out.
Siona stopped and turned.
Is it not safe in Goigoa?
It is very peaceful here, one of the men said.
Then we will not need guards, Siona said. Have them guard the Thopter.
Again she led Idaho toward the village.
All right,
Idaho said, disengaging his arm from Siona's grasp.
What is this place?
It is very likely that you will find this a very restful place, Siona said. It is not like the old Shulok at all. Very peaceful.
You're up to something, Idaho said, striding beside her. What is it?
I've always heard that Golas were full of questions, Siona said. I too have questions.
Oh?
What was he like in your day? The man Leto?
Which one?
Yes, I forget there were two. The grandfather and our Leto. I mean our Leto, of course.
He was just a child. That's all I know.
The oral history says one of his early brides came from this village.
Brides?
I thought, when he still had a manly shape. It was after the death of his sister, but before he began to change into the worm. The oral history says the brides of Leto vanished into the maze of the Imperial Citadel, never to be seen again except as faces and voices transmitted by Hollow. He has not had a bride for thousands of years.
They had arrived at a small square at the center of the village, a space about 50 meters on a side and with a low-walled pool of clear water in its center. Siona crossed to the pool's wall and sat on the rock ledge, patting beside her for Idaho to join her there. Idaho looked around at the village first, noting how people peered out at him from behind curtained windows, how the children pointed and whispered. He turned and stood looking down at Siona.
What is this place?
I've told you. Tell me what Muad'Dib was like.
He was the best friend a man could ever have.
So the oral history is true, but it calls the caliphate of his heirs the Desposaini, and that has an evil sound.
She's baiting me, Idaho thought. He allowed himself a tight smile, wondering at Siona's motives. She appeared to be waiting for some important event, anxious, even dreading, but with an undertone of something like elation. It was all there. Nothing she said now could be accounted as more than small talk, a way of occupying the moments until...
Until what?
The light sound of running feet intruded on his reverie. Idaho turned and saw a child of perhaps 8 years racing toward him out of a side street. The child's bare feet kicked up little dust geysers as he ran, and there was the sound of a woman shouting. A despairing sound, somewhere up the street. The runner stopped about 10 paces away and stared up at Idaho with a hungering look, an intensity which Idaho found disturbing. The child appeared vaguely familiar, a boy, a stalwart figure with dark curly hair, an unfinished face but with hints of the man to be, rather high cheekbones, a flat line across the brows. He wore a faded blue single suit which betrayed the effects of much laundering, but obviously had begun as a garment of excellent material. It had the look of punji cotton woven in a cord lock that did not permit even the frayed edges to unravel.
"You're not my father," the child said.
Whirling away, he raced back up the street and vanished around a corner. Idaho turned and scowled at Siona, almost afraid to ask the question, "Was that a child of my predecessor?" He knew the answer without asking. That familiar face, the genotype carried true. Myself as a child. Realization left him with an empty feeling, a sense of frustration. What is my responsibility? Siona put both hands over her face and hunched her shoulders. It had not happened at all the way she had imagined it might. She felt betrayed by her own desires for revenge. Idaho was not simply a Gola, something alien and unworthy of consideration. She had felt him thrown against her in the Thopter, had seen the obvious emotions on his face. And that child.
"What happened to my predecessor?" Idaho asked.
His voice came out flat and accusatory. She lowered her hands. There was suppressed rage in his face.
"We are not certain," she said. "But he entered the Citadel one day and never emerged."
"That was his child?" She nodded. "You're sure you did not kill my predecessor?"
"Aye."
She shook her head, shocked by the doubts, the latent accusation in him.
"That child, that is the reason we came here?" She swallowed.
"Yes."
"What am I supposed to do about him?"
She shrugged, feeling soiled and guilty because of her own actions.
"What about his mother?" Idaho asked.
"She and the others live up that street."
Siona nodded in the direction the boy had gone.
"Others?"
"There is an older son. A daughter. I could arrange..."
"No. The boy was right. I'm not his father."
"I'm sorry," Siona whispered. "I should not have done this."
"Why did he choose this place?" Idaho asked.
"The father, your..."
"My predecessor."
"Because this was Irti's home, and she would not leave. That is what people said."
"Irti? The mother?"
"Wife, by the old rite, the one from the oral history."
Idaho looked around at the stone fronts of the buildings which enclosed the square, the curtained windows, the narrowed doors.
"So he lived here?"
"When he could."
"How did he die, Siona?"
"Truly, I do not know, but the worm has killed others. We know that for sure."
"How do you know it?"
He centered a probing stare on her face. The intensity of it forced her to look away.
"I do not doubt the stories of my ancestors," she said. "They are told in bits and pieces, a note here, a whispered account there, but I believe them. My father believes them too."
"Moneo has said nothing to me of this."
"One thing you can say about the Atreides," she said. "We're loyal, and that's a fact. We keep our word."
Idaho opened his mouth to speak, closed it without making a sound.
"Of course. Siona too was Atreides."
The thought shook him. He had known it, but he had not accepted it. Siona was some kind of a rebel whose actions were almost sanctioned by Leto. The limits of his permission were unclear, but Idaho sensed them.
"You must not harm her," Leto had said. "She is to be tested."
Idaho turned his back on Siona.
"You don't know anything for sure," he said. "Bits and pieces. Rumors."
Siona did not respond.
"He's an Atreides," Idaho said.
"He's the worm,"
Siona said, and the venom in her voice was almost palpable.
"Your damned oral history is nothing but a bunch of ancient gossip," Idaho accused. "Only a fool would believe it."
"You still trust him," she said, That will change.
Idaho whirled and glared at her.
You've never talked to him.
I have. When I was a child.
You're still a child. He's all of the Atreides who were, all of them. It's a terrible thing, but I knew those people. They were my friends.
Siona only shook her head. Again, Idaho turned away. He felt that he had been wrung dry of emotion. He was spiritually boneless. Without willing it, he began walking across the square and up the street where the boy had gone. Siona came running after him and fell into step, but he ignored her. The street was narrow, enclosed by the one-story stone walls, the doors set back within arched frames, all of the doors closed. The windows were small versions of the doors, curtains twitched as he passed. At the first cross street, Idaho stopped and looked to the right, where the boy had gone. Two grey-haired women in long black skirts and dark green blouses stood a few paces away down the street, gossiping with their heads close together. They fell silent when they saw Idaho and stared at him with open curiosity. He returned their stare, then looked down the side street. It was empty. Idaho turned toward the women, passed them within a pace. They drew closer together and turned to watch him. They looked only once at Siona, then returned their attention to Idaho. Siona moved quietly beside him, an odd expression on her face.
Sadness? He wondered. Regret? Curiosity?
It was difficult to say. He was more curious about the doorways and windows they were passing.
Have you ever been to Goigoa before?
Idaho asked.
No.
Siona spoke in a subdued voice, as though afraid of it.
Why am I walking down this street?
Idaho wondered. Even as he asked himself the question, he knew the answer.
This woman, this Iati. What kind of a woman would bring me to Goigoa?